Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good morning and welcome to the latest edition of our Burr News Facebook Live interviews. I'm here this morning with Sir John Swan. Sir John, thank you very much for sparing some time in your very busy schedule. It's much appreciated. There's a whole range of things that I want to ask you your opinion of. But politics is never far away from Bermuda. We've seen an awful lot of politics. We can't get away from the politics. Where is the political landscape from your point of view? Where is politics at now?
Well, I think what we're seeing basically is a level of noise that needs to really be converted to performance.
Right.
I think Bermuda has many issues. And what we tend to do is pick one issue and we make a lot of noise about it. And therefore the issues that maybe others that we should be addressing gets lost. So what I see hopefully is that the noise level will come down, that there will be much more of an interchange in the attitude and the participation by politicians, not only at the parliamentary level, but also at the community level. You can't run this country and make it effective and make it attractive if you're constantly bumping up into each other, because, you know, we must remember that the outside world now has access to us like it has access to everything else.
Indeed, yes.
And so when they see us doing some things, whether it's to make political points or whether it's to feel as though that you have an objection and you're going to have such a strong objection that you're going to upset the whole country. And I think it does a lot of damage. I think we're going to have to start thinking about probably using more committee, like the Minister of Finance used for the airport. I think that might be a way in which we end up having a somewhat of an independent, at least analysis of something, whether it's done by the minister or whoever else. But the way we were going, it's going to hurt Bermuda, and therefore it hurts its people.
It's interesting you talk about the noise. Is there a way that... Is politics at such a stage now that it's very difficult to actually stop making that noise? Has it gone too far down the line?
Well, you never go too far. You know,
politics. But it almost seems as if it's become the norm.
Politics is made up of 36 members. It's not a lot of people to get to understand what their responsible role should be and how they should conduct themselves in that responsible role. Politicians are the senior members of this community. Mm. You know, there's no higher order elected or higher body elected.
But they are the lawmakers.
Than the lawmakers of the country. So first of all, you've got to put yourself up on a pedestal and say, I have an obligation to the public to make sure that they understand what's being said and on the issues or the pros and cons of any issue. Raise other issues. But do it in a sense that instead of talking, the politicians talking to each other, they talk to the public and have a conversation with the public. We don't have conversations anymore. What we have now is protest. Protest and noise. And the public, therefore, gets left out in the process and, therefore, it either hangs on to something that's irrelevant or hangs on to something that they consider to be irrelevant because more noise has been made about that.
So you think there's a level of misinformation almost?
I think there's a level, particularly in an electronic world where everything is in your face. I mean, you know, it's not always
social
politicians'
media, yeah.
fault.
Mm.
It is. We're living in a stage now where technology is having such an impact on how we see things, how we do things, even the things we want. Then we see the outside world instantly in front of us. And so there's a lot more processing taking place in front of us. What we've got to do is try to sort of separate the substance of the process as opposed to the activity of the process, which just goes on. It's like watching one of the international media's talking. They tend to pick a subject, and it goes on and on and on and on. The end result is there's no substance being handed to people. What is being handed is an opinion that is very superficially presented and with not a lot of rationale behind it. And, you know, we're a small country. We're 50,000 Bermudians and about 10,000 non-nationals. But we have an audience of 7 billion people around
Absolutely.
The world.
Mm.
So we got to, you know, when we speak, we're speaking to our audience here, but we're also speaking to some of the components around the world that might want to do business, and particularly Bermuda, that we have no natural resources. Our natural resources are our people, and as such, we have to realize the fact that whatever we do is going to have an impact on how our country ends up. So I think it's very, very important that we have a conversation as to how we're going to conduct ourselves, and the media can help a lot in that process, because it's how we sort of... And we're beginning to see something. I think that the slowing down of protests to a certain extent, non-participation by people attending events that seem to have a political bend, I think that there is a public sending us a message. Now the question is, are we getting the message?
That's a very good question, and of course, probably going to be in an election year this year. Do you think the message is going to reach the politicians to reduce the level of noise during the election year?
Well, I don't think that... Don't get confused between noise and their logical message. The logical message, a message that people are going to benefit from, and the country's going to benefit from, the country's going to have some direction from, I think that's very essential.
Mm-hmm.
And that means the fact that I'm presenting my case to the public, I'm having a conversation with the public, instead of always feeling as though I've got to have a conversation with the next politician.
Mm.
And therefore, really, in a sense, the public gets left out. And this is one of the things that's been happening around the world. So we're no exception.
Absolutely, yeah.
But except for that, we have issues that we need to deal with ourselves. We're a small country. We're 3,000 people per square mile, the second most densely populated country in the world. So anything happens anywhere in Bermuda has a direct impact on everybody. So our equation is different. If somebody says something in New York, and somebody's in California, or somebody's from Seattle, Washington, or in Chicago, that doesn't have the same impact those places as it might have in New York. We are a one-horse town with a one-message facility process.
Mm.
That if we get it wrong, we really get it wrong, and it affects everybody.
Just moving on from the political side, just looking at where Bermuda stands now, is Bermuda in a good place?
Well,
socially, economically, well, politically, perhaps?
You've asked the question. There is geography, which is Bermuda itself physically. Sociology, which is the components of the social, in other words, the people's attitudes and how people are living and health needs and everything else. And then there's resources, which is capital and products, whether it's buildings, homes, or whether it is supply of money. And more importantly is obligations that need to be met. I think if you take, first of all, the sociology, which is people and how they are, we have a very rapidly falling population.
Mm-hmm.
We have an aging, very rapidly aging population. Which means the fact that we have less people available from the Bermuda pool to call upon. Don't get confused with people who say, well, we have unemployment. Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean the fact that that equation changes. That equation is consistent because it's the rate of birth rate,
mm-hmm,
and everything else. Then there's the physiology, which means the fact that how the island's maintained, what are the resources the island has to offer, and how we employ those resources to satisfy some of the needs that the country has, not only needs locally but internationally. Now the next one is resources. Resources in the form of capital, and also resources in terms of intellect, which are very important. Resources in terms of intellect, the first one is how can we enhance our brain power? How can we enhance how we get things done in an efficient manner when you're facing a virtual world where the world is changing, where technology is taking over, and where robotics and 3D printing and things of that type and communication will dominate our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things that we do now, like one time people pushed a plow, did a lot of things physically. Nowadays your car breaks down, they order a whole part.
That's
and
right.
They just stick it back on again. So we're talking about really, in a sense, a different world altogether. So there are a lot of physical resources that are going to change how we do things. And then the next one is economic resources. We're not in a good place with economic resources because we have a GDP that's growing very slow, gross domestic product. We have a debt that's growing because our GDP isn't growing fast enough to reduce the debt. We have to find a way, and it's going to be innovative. It's going to have to be, and you can't just keep beating on the same horse as we tend to do. We keep beating on international business. We keep beating on tourism. Tourism doesn't necessarily bring you what you think it brings you, because you build new hotels. You have to pay for the debt, the hotel. You have to pay the service management fees. And if you're importing people, and particularly if they're coming from countries that send the money back home, when your net result of that process doesn't give you a lot to say can go in circulation to grow your GDP, and therefore if GDP isn't growing, government's take is less, and therefore the debt either stays the same or increases. So we've got to find a way in which we really have some genuine economic activity in Bermuda.
That's everybody's wish list. It's easier said than done, though, isn't it? I mean, you've been a proponent, I think, in the past of immigration in the sense of bringing foreign workers in to help stimulate the economy. Is that an issue that needs addressing?
Well, first of all, don't get confused between foreign workers and foreign resources. Foreign resources would be trying to find a way in which Bermuda becomes an attractive place for people to come and live. And do business from, not on a corporate basis, but not necessarily an insurance basis, but on a place that Bermuda's a safe place to be. It's a very nice place to be, and you see that with the Preparation America's Cup, we're going to have a lot of marinas and everything else, a lot of residual resources left from America's Cup that could be made use of. So what we need to do is to look and say, how do we get Bermuda moving now? When the boom was last time, there was a lot of expansion that took place outside of Hamilton, and people got tired of seeing them being pushed out of their homes and everything else. I'm not a proponent of going through that process again. What I am, though, is recognizing that if you want to have economic resources, people bring economic resources. They either bring it by way of labor, or they bring it by way of self-wealth. And I'm talking about self-wealth. So, and self-wealth then pays for the labor and the growing of the economy. So what we should be doing is saying, where is it that we can do it? You take Hamilton example. Hamilton, most of Hamilton now, the real business of Hamilton is either in the East End, mostly, or in the West End. But Santa Hamilton has been wiped out practically by people shifting old buildings that can't keep up with what is considered to be more contemporary things that international people are looking for. So what we have to do is do like any city, whether it's in Italy, whether it's in Rome, whether it's in Madrid, or whether it's in London. They've taken some of these buildings that they have and they've converted them to small hotels.
That's right, yeah. Yep.
They've converted them into apartment buildings. Now, I talked about resources. That those things need capital. We Bermudians don't have that capital. Mm. I mean, you know, let's not get caught up in our ego. We don't have that capital. So we need to bring in people with resources. So maybe what we have to do is lay out a smorgasbord of what foreigners can do in Bermuda that's going to bring them here to, first of all, to fix up places, put places on the market. We don't have to sell ourselves down the drain. We have very specific ways in which we do that. But it's got to be so that at the very beginning of the discussion stage of any project, the person doesn't have to say, well, I wonder if the government's going to give me permission to this. I wonder if the government's going to give me permission to that. Money hates wonder. Hates wonder. Money likes to know there's a certainty. And when I make a decision, I'm going to be able to have that decision honored.
So, just, you mentioned, you know, bringing in the wealth creators, basically, and you mentioned the America's Cup. We're going to see an awful lot of wealth creators coming for the America's Cup. Just two questions, really. Is the America's Cup, can it leave that kind of legacy, do you think? Do you think it can bring enough attention to Bermuda, enough wealth to Bermuda to actually leave something here in the long run?
Well, you know, this is a unique opportunity, America's Cup. Yeah, it's a unique opportunity for many reasons. A small country of some 60,000 people putting on one of the great world events. It's an event, it's like putting on a big show. It has certain requirements, it has an environmental requirement, it has a facilitation requirement. Now the question is, can we facilitate it? What the America's Cup will bring to us? And what are we putting into the process that allow, therefore, something to be left behind? First of all, I think that there is going to be every effort to satisfy the needs of America's Cup. It's not just, see, you've got to keep in mind, it's not just America's Cup. It's the tall ships, the J-boats,
absolutely, yeah.
The Newport Bermuda, the Marion to Bermuda race. There are so many other, and then the visiting boats that will come here to view all this. We've got a sort of archaic way of discouraging boats from...
Sorry, Sir John, I'm just going to have to stop you one second. I've just got instructions. This is live TV. We have to switch mics. We're live, guys. I beg your pardon to interrupt you mid-flow.
That's all right.
We weren't picking up the sound properly. So you were talking about the America's Cup.
So, you know, a certain amount of resources have been spent on America's Cup to prepare for that event. Those resources will be left in Bermuda to a certain extent. It's up to us. But keep in mind what I said earlier. We don't have the people base to do a whole lot of things we think we can do. So we've got to make efficient use and be able to encourage foreigners to come in here and make use of Bermuda where we get a revenue from. I mentioned earlier that the debt that we carry and the growth of the GDP is very slow, and also the unfunded things like pension funds have to be funded. You know, approximately some 13,000 people over the age of 65. They're pensionable and it's growing. Yet at the same time, our birth rate is at 1.2 roughly, which means, in fact, last year I think we had something like 440 births. And when you put the two together, the death rate is exceeding the birth rate. So we've got to figure out how we can, and since we are a people-to-people economy, well, not an economy that says, you know, you can put big resources up on the ground. People provide a service, we get a product imported, we provide a service in that product. Going back to America's Cup, the America's Cup makes Bermuda known around the world. And the attractiveness of this very unique place that we take for granted. We think that, I've been all around the world. I haven't come across anything as attractive as Bermuda is physically. Mm. What we've got to do is now is make Bermuda attractive, intellectually attractive, by stepping up and presenting ourselves and presenting a product that other people want to sort of enjoy into it. We can't close our minds or close our borders or hold on to products that are not really value-added products and expect to take and have growth. A good example is Singapore. You know, it's an open, it's a market economy, does things, has discipline and so forth. Another economy is Cayman, be honest about it. I mean, we don't want to be a Cayman, but, you know, Cayman's been able to pull itself out of its recession by, first of all, the British going in and insisting there be some discipline, but more importantly is the fact that it's a market economy that works. Now, we don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we should be thinking about things that we are prepared to give up in order to get something. You can't just sit and say, status quo, we're gonna build some hotels and hope we'll get some money, create some jobs, we might get some money. This lift, I always tell people, you know, we've got about 7,000 people in the international business, including lawyers and accountants and everything else. And we have about 7,000 people in the civil service, roughly, rough. Government gets a contribution from this side about $1 billion. And over this side, it costs about $1 billion. Now, this is like two ends of a hammock that sits there. And the hammock used to be was very comfortable. And everybody participating in the center could move from here to here or from here to here and vice versa. The hammock has got now a big belly in it. That's the down. We've got to find the energy to lift that belly piece up. And that lifting that belly piece up, you can't do it simply by talking and not doing something.
I agree. Yeah. But The Americas, going back to the America's Cup, that is doing something. Yeah. Can that provide a bit of a lift to this belly, to use your analogy?
I think it can. It puts Bermuda on the map. But we still have to have the policies and the practices to create those benefits from it. It's not going to be just we build a new airport or we build a hotel. It's going to be where America's Cup had a lot of wealthy people coming. Already a couple of people involved with, I know of at least, involved with America's Cup. I bought homes here.
Right.
So all these people coming down here, if Bermuda's attractive, if we could find them saying, oh, if I can't buy, I'd like to buy an apartment. If they buy an apartment in the city. But we're talking about a new city now. We're not talking about old city. We're talking about making the city attractive. Like, you know, like making the waterfront a people's park. You know, it's not about any individual owning the waterfront. It's about the public owning the waterfront. If this is our park. This is our activity center. This is where people come, whether you're a foreigner, whether you're a local, whether you're from Tuckerstown, whether you're from Beckerton. You all come in, and it has all the amenities that will let that process take place.
One of my questions was going to be the waterfront, and you have preempted that. Are we going to look back in 20 years' time and say, if only, when it comes to the waterfront, it's been talked about for...
It's been 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I've had a challenge to people. I put on the display at number 6 shed down there and put a contest in and so forth, and people embraced it. But the politicians never embraced it. If they had, they would have been, I think Bermuda would be a different place. And that doesn't apply to OBA either. It applies to OBA, it much applies to PLP. They just couldn't wrap their minds around it. And I just think it's just lack of imagination, that's all.
And
a lack of will. That is, without that, there is no signature development. You can build all you want a dockyard. This is the capital of Bermuda. You know, London might have Canary Wharf, but it's a part of London, you know. We don't have I give the Princess credit for the Greens for putting the assets into Princess. We have the Yacht Club has made some expansions. But generally speaking, there is not a dynamic infusion of ideas that's going to enhance the city to a point that let's go to Bermuda because we know we can be in the city and have a good time. We go to restaurants, we can go to museums, we can have a yacht down in Bermuda and keep it down there and come from New England where it's cold up as hell up there and come down and sit on a boat or for a weekend and enjoy it. It becomes the weekend playground. Maybe what we have to do is start looking at, we have this enormous tax on boats. Put the tax onto registration and take it off of bringing ships into Bermuda. Sit and do nothing.
But why have people sat and done nothing? Especially when it regards to the waterfront, as you say, it's been knocking around for 20 years.
I think this
it's a lack of imagination. But.
I just think that it is where... What is your priority, what somebody's priority, and what somebody else's priority is different. As people have seen a change in the desire of the politician's priority, and they're elected to represent their constituents. They consider it to be their priority either to protect things or to make things grow in a way that they don't have to give up protection, give up their protectionism. You can't make an omelet unless you break some eggs. I don't see a lot of eggs being broken.
I was going to say, that was my next question. Are any eggs being broken?
I don't see a lot of eggs being broken. I don't see a lot of people saying, let's step outside the envelope and see what it is. And have a discussion about it. We might throw it away. Doesn't mean that anybody, and nobody has a lock on ideas. But we need to sort of, you know, say, okay, Bermuda, if we go this way and continue to do what we're doing, our children and our grandchildren will suffer because somebody has to pay the bills. So, and the master or whoever is the banker or the loan person is eventually going to say, if you can't pay your bills, you can't have any more. You theoretically devalue your standard of living. I don't want to see that happen. But when you look at the reality of our economics,
it could happen.
Do you find that frustrating?
Well, I'm up in age now, you know, and I've worked very hard to secure my business and everything else. It's not about me.
Yeah, but it's about the
people that have helped me to be what I am. And when I see them in the state that they are, I'm not happy with it, because they have done nothing wrong except to try to fit into a system that we, myself, and others as politicians have created.
Leaving the development of the waterfront for a while, we are going to see a very large development now the legislation has been passed about the airport. Is that something you welcome?
Well, I 100% endorse the airport. As you know, I did an inspection of the airport and made it publicly known that the airport is in a horrible state. It's been patched up for too long now, and it runs a risk of being damaged because of weather conditions, or even possibility of a fire. Bermuda has to recognize one fundamental thing, which really brings it home to you, is without an airport, we're out of business. Mm-hmm. We're out of business tourist-wise, we're out of business international business-wise, and Bermudians won't be able to travel unless they go by boat. And it's not something that you can sort of pitch a tent and say, I've got a new airport. So we really need to sort of go there. I think the Minister of Finance has done a hell of a job of doing a PPP that accommodates the process of us building the airport. And when I looked at other places have done it, I looked and realized that other places have done the same thing. And so I don't think we had a choice unless we were fools. That's all.
To build a new airport?
Yeah.
Or the BPP process?
Well, the PPP process was necessary because, again, go back to if your GDP isn't growing, if your debt has been growing, and if you can avoid burdening yourself with a continued debt which has implications for you from a point of view of being able to adding that to your debt itself. So I think it was essential that we had no choice but to do that, and I think that the minister did a good job in getting that process done. It wasn't easy. He's a Minister of Finance. He's a figures man. He's not a public relations man. Don't expect him to be like, you know, sometimes you don't have everything in something. But I think that in the final analysis, I think his wisdom put together the Blue Ribbon Team was a very good one. I think that it brought out certain facts that couldn't ordinarily be brought out. And I think everybody got on board in final analysis and said, look, you know, this is the reality where we are. In fact, I'm very pleased with the public has, you know, given a very positive response to it.
Government to government, that was the right way to go then. That was the right way to pursue this deal.
It was the only way we could go. It wasn't a question of right way to go. It was the only way we could go. If he went out and said, I want to borrow another $200 million or $300 million on the debt that we have, the answer would have been no. Right? The answer would have been emphatic no. When do we stop letting you have it? And there's always going to be something that we have to do that's beside the airport that we still might have to borrow money on. So the best thing you could do was to do that. The question is, what best deal we could get? And that was the best deal we could get on it. And the idea of, and the Canadian government made it very clear, Aecon is their people that they're going to assist with getting the job done. And so we had a choice, either throw Aecon under the wheel of the bus, or else let Aecon get on with what it has to get on with. There's no perfect solution. Whoever you are, whatever you do, there's always all sorts of alternatives to a solution. I think this was the best possibility of getting the project done.
The other project, or projects, that are still in the pipeline that haven't materialized yet are casinos. You're a proponent of casinos on Bermuda.
I'm a proponent of casinos in Bermuda. I just get increasingly worried that if you could build three casinos, I was never in favor of three casinos. I have one casino in Hamilton.
Right.
You don't have the catchment to justify three casinos.
I'm assuming the three casinos would be small and boutique. I don't know, but we haven't seen any yet, and there's a,
well,
a long delay.
Well, there's all sorts of... I mean, I think if Bermuda doesn't get it right, it could even be upgraded. I'd rather this one here get it right than to open it and have a greater disaster on our hands. I mean, we're talking about our reputation, and casinos are touchy things in any sphere, because there's all sorts of possibility of money laundering and all sorts of other activity, and also how you govern that casino and how you have the resources to satisfy its requirements, all play itself out in the process. You just can't say, here's a license, now you go ahead and open a casino. And if somebody gets a big jackpot or somebody, and you say, I don't have the money, the casino, your country's reputation,
yeah,
the casino's reputation are all wrapped into one.
Do you think it's going to happen soon?
I think it will happen. I just think that, we need to realize the fact that it's something that will require decisions that are really, in a sense, sound, good judgment decisions, and maybe not at that stage we are satisfied that they can make those type of decisions, and therefore, and this one here, you're better off being cautious than thinking, well, I'll do it and then worry about the problems after. It doesn't work. This is one thing it doesn't work with.
But do you think it's going to happen? And you?
It will happen.
Do you think it's important to Bermuda for it to happen?
I think it's important to the projects that are trying to get themselves off the ground, and they need financing, and people see casinos as a means of financing things and adding casinos are not no panacea to anything.
No.
Casinos are not going to bring the money that people think it's going to bring. Casino is more or less a part of a package. You know, you can have a show, you have shows in a hotel or an environment. You can have activities in it. Casino is an activity. I mean, you know, don't get to thinking that, you know, if we have a casino, the money's just going to pour into it. Because as quick as the money pours in, the law of average says certain money has to pour out again. But Bermuda's a very expensive destination, which means the fact that the operating cost in Bermuda is much higher. So therefore, you've got to, and you can't be violating rules of gaming by increasing your percentage unduly and therefore not passing that money, some of the money back to the gaming person. So it's a tough one, but and it has to make sure that there are people with sufficient capital to do it, and then making sure that there is sufficient, really prima facie, unquestionable means and resources to satisfy the financial needs of the gaming public once they are required. So it's a big project, and I'd rather be cautious, because if not Bermuda, you only have one reputation. I always tell my people when I'm selling or doing something, business and so forth, I said, you know, we only have one opportunity. You either get it right at the beginning, and then it will come out right at the end. But if you don't get it right at the beginning, it won't come out right at the end. And if you accumulate those type of things, if you think we've got a problem now, we'll have a bigger problem.
A couple of other issues that I would like to touch on while we have the time. I'm going to quote from a column that you wrote last year, I believe it was, on the same-sex marriage issue. He said, I'm fortunate to have been given a second chance by way of this process, which was, I believe, the referendum, to categorically state that I am in favour of same-sex marriage, as all human beings under God's and universal law have every right of equality.
Yeah.
Why? What prompted the change of heart? Because you were against the original bill, and I forget the name of it.
As I explained to people, I was always in favour of same-sex marriage. Well, I've got so-called adopted sons. People come, my children's friends come to the house and everything else. And some of my adult contemporaries and friends are, you know. So they're all, you know, all homosexual. I have no problems with it. There was a different set of circumstances. The churches, we knew we could pass the vote. So it was a question of, mine was a political decision to decide that once we got down to the essence, I knew the vote was there, that we would give some sympathy to the question. We wouldn't just throw the churches under the bus. And I therefore cast my vote against it, knowing that it was going to pass. If I thought it wasn't going to pass, and maybe I should have been more principally committed, and regardless of what the vote was, stood on my principle. I didn't, and I've never sort of thought that I had really did the right thing at the time, because I should have stood for what I believed in, as opposed to trying to please both ends. And I ended up in the middle. If you believe in whether it's Darwin, and Darwin talked about the species, not only sort of human beings, but all animals, and the law of probability of all animals being born exactly the same, is not true. But we are the children of God. If you believe in God, you believe that we are all His children. If you believe that we are all His children, you should believe the fact that when one is different, whether they've got polio, whether they've got something, they're entitled to get as much care and as much attention as anybody else. What people are trying to do, they're trying to separate homosexuality from anything else in nature. And you can't. The laws of nature are the laws of nature. The laws of creativity are the laws of creativity. And there is a parallel in relationship between the two. And therefore, to make a distinction saying a homosexual person is a non-person in a normal sense is a nonsense. We have a law in our books called the Human Rights Act. And the Human Rights Act makes it very clear. We are bumping up against the Human Rights Act in Bermuda. We're bumping up against the Human Rights Act in Europe and everywhere else. And yet at the same time, we're saying we want these people to come to Bermuda, but we want them to be what we consider normal as opposed to what they are, being just naturally normal. I think we are barking up the wrong tree. The churches have ideological ideas that somehow or the other a person is not a real person unless they are a certain way. I think on this matter the churches are wrong. They're fundamentally wrong. And I think Bermuda is being looked upon as being really out of step. Particularly since we are such a big international center, we enjoy a very high standard of living, we enjoy all the things that regardless of what a person is, we've enjoyed. But my suspicion is slowly as technology and information reaches the world and the growth that we'd like to have, because we don't have that, will slowly be diminished. There's only so much to go around. As we know, 90% of the world's wealth now is controlled by less than 1% of the world's population, which means the fact that these key people in the world that are making decisions about the world, these big conglomerates are being run by, and most of those have make it very clear that they have no issues with homosexuality. So what's going to happen is, slowly in a subtle way, that we'll be diminished by taking a position that is contrary to human rights and human natural laws of nature. Because a few people say that somehow or the other nature got it wrong. What a contradiction. And I cannot bring myself. So I've taken a position that very simply says the fact that Bermuda, let's get ourselves into the 21st century. We've got big issues to deal with. And we should not be marginalizing people as a result of a ideological bend that says the fact that if I subscribe to something, I must believe in somebody's interpretation of perceptions and defy and deny somebody else the right of a normal process.
The referendum, not enough people turned out to vote at the referendum on same-sex marriage to make it count.
Well,
why do you think that was?
You know why? Because the referendum was very... I was confused. The referendum didn't ask one question, it asked two questions.
Yeah.
And those two questions confused the hell out of people. And nobody wants to admit that some of those decisions were wrong. It was very confusing. The referendum should have been very simple. I mean, the referendum talking about civil marriage, right, and a non-civil marriage, which means the church, so that you would have had it where the church wasn't compelled to do it, and that's fine. That's an individual choice. But the state could do it. What we should have said, do you believe that the state, this should be a responsibility of the state, or this should be a responsibility of the, or if we get over the, relieve the church of their responsibilities, but the state shouldn't be absolved from its responsibility. Mm. And that's where the thing had a fundamental flaw in it.
Would you like to see it repeated? I mean, regardless of the cost, we'll just take that out of the equation, because obviously there was a...
Well, I mean, at the moment, we're sitting here, we're sitting on potentially a case before the courts.
We are, yeah. We're waiting for the judgment.
And if the judgment comes down, I mean, keep in mind that that can be taken all the way to England, to the European Court.
Yeah.
Well, the European Court, they've already ruled on homosexuality. The British have already ruled on homosexuality. We're only sitting here as a mole, basically hoping that somehow or the other somebody is not going to pay attention to us. But the reality is we're out of step with what's going on other places.
The other big issue here, and it's been an issue recently, is the issue of race relations. There was a poll that did say that more people were, white people were experiencing racism. How do you feel race relations are? What's the state of race relations in Bermuda?
Well, I think race relations is a factor of economics. You know, we keep thinking it's a factor of sociology or anthropology, which means a historical background or from things that have happened. I think economics is the big factor. And I think that that we have a unique society here, or a society here, which your dominant force here, first of all, your international business, predominantly controlled by the white community. You then have your other dominant force here, your mercantilism, your function, predominantly controlled by the white community. And there is less opportunity for all Bermudians, black or white, because the economy is stagnant. In fact, it's declining when you look at how many places on it are shut up. I've mentioned to you before, we had these two forces, and people could move from civil servant to jobs out in the field itself, and their children, or at least, or they themselves could move to international business. That process is just gone. The bottom is falling out of it. And it wasn't the Sage Commission to solve that problem. The Sage Commission was a way of not solving the problem Bermuda needs to solve. It was to say, we'll pick on the civil servants, but we'll leave everything else, and this bulge down the bottom will stay the same. We'll put the civil, and they'll just create more unemployment, and in fact, the bulge will get bigger, because civil servants do contribute towards the GDP. What we need to... So race in Bermuda... It's an economic factor that is perpetuated by those who feel as though there's something wrong, but they can't get their hands around it or their heads around it. So they talk about what somebody did to them 100 years ago, reparation, whatever you want to call it, or that they are being kept out of a system because they see international business and how it's going and so forth. Or they see the managers of existing businesses giving curry favor to their relatives and friends and so forth, or bringing people in. And when you look at the the composition of Bermuda, where the population black versus white, the black community numerically on a purely Bermudian basis is far exceeds the white population. But when you get down to putting in the foreign population with it that live day to day in Bermuda, it's about 50-50. So in one case, they have the political power, but in another case, the economic power switches around the other way. You can tell somebody who can't pay the bills, you can say, well, go out and get a job. Go out and get a job and do what? Landscaping, when I don't understand landscape. They brought blacks to Bermuda to landscaping before they brought Portuguese to Bermuda. And they didn't do it. It didn't fit in with their nature to do it. Now you're telling them to go ahead and do it in the 21st century. They brought in kitchen help to do the hotels. Blacks used to be in the hotels. Blacks' parents worked very hard when they were opportunities in Bermuda to make sure the kids got education to do it. Now, to solve all these problems, what we decided to do, we're going to separate these kids and so forth and give them some. So we built the Cedar Bridge, and we built the Barclay Institute, two big, and these are all black schools. The white schools, and by far 90% of the whites, 95% of whites went to white schools. So the issue was the black schools. And the issue was, if we only had technical back, we'd be okay. But in actual fact, the physical technical revolution has moved on. The intellectual tech, where you simply have a part in the car, you take that part out, or you put a computer to it, and you fix the car. Mm. You know, so and those people who were doing those, that could do those type of jobs, that were the people who were the craftsmen, they sent their kids to colleges and universities, or doctors, whether it's, and I can name the people who, like, it's so clear to me that that's what happened. So, race relations in Bermuda is the whites seem to be sitting on a great deal of wealth, or Austin. But they're not as, the white Bermudian is not as anywhere near, because the recession knocked him for a loop. And that plays itself out on our television every night, because when you see what's going on in America, you see the same thing, and they're very vociferous about it. Now, the white community in Bermuda has now started to feel the effect, because Bermuda slowed down so much that they're doing jobs that the black Bermudian used to do. You walk around town, now you see these guys painting and doing things that used to be so black Bermudians do. So the dynamics of racism is not just a straight black-white issue. I mean, we're the most integrated society in the world in terms of marriage. It is the issue is economics. And give me a chance to do something. Give me a job. You're hearing the word job. Give me a job. We're going to create jobs. But no one's saying, what is it that we need to do to create the type of jobs that these people need to be able to get out of this mess that we're in? And therefore, racism will stay there, and emotions will stay there, because it's not about purely white on white or black on white, because now we're discovering it's white on white, because there are whites who are pissed off with the white community because they don't see themselves any transition to anything else. There are blacks have always been that way. That's why they've rioted and they've created havoc. And I once told a group of people, 1975, 76 or so, I said, until we have the white revolution, Bermuda would never go change. What I said is, until blacks and white partner and try to build a Bermuda that everybody feels as though we're all working together to get benefits, we'll always be this divided community. And that's what we are now. We are a divided community on economic grounds. And we're trying to use that, we keep interpreting that on sociological grounds, that somehow or the other, that is a separation. The waterfront was about at least getting people from Tuckerstown, Bacatown, foreign or local, having an environment by which we all come together and the kids can enjoy things. We didn't even know each other. We have no common ground for getting to know each other. So we've got some work to do in Bermuda. Nobody's going away. I'm seeing more and more people saying, I just came back from Australia. I just came back from England. In other words, they've been through the cycle. It happened back in the 70s, early 70s. They went down to New Zealand. They went down to Australia. And they all popped back to Bermuda. I'm beginning to see that process taking place again. So Bermudians aren't going anywhere. They're not. Where is there to go? So we either make this ship work, or else we'll see our standard of living just go down.
Can the ship work?
The ship can work. The ship can work, and maybe what we as the general public have to start now is defining what we want from our politicians. You see, we have left it been spoiled. When Jack Tucker was around, leave Bermuda to Jack Tucker. When Sheriff Rich was around, leave it to Sheriff Rich. When John Swan was around, leave it to John Swan. When Jennifer Smith was around, we left it to the politicians, and we held our politicians up on a pedestal. And we thought that they were the be-all and know-all since we elected them. What we're discovering is they know what they know, but is it sufficient that's going to get us to where we need to get to? So, and so we need, as Bermudians, with our foreign partnerships, start discussing what is it that's going to make Bermuda work. And instead of depending on the politicians or afraid to express views on this, we've got to get in the habit now of saying, we're going to have an open mind about it. We're going to take and seek solutions to the problem. We're not going to be, every time somebody opens their mouth up, which is a view that's different than ours, we try to take and destroy them or denigrate them or feel as though that, you know, what right do you have? We've got to partner with the foreign population. You know, you get down to it, 90% of our foreign exchange over the last 400 years, in reality, if you check the buzz or the basis of that foreign exchange, has been by foreigners. We Bermudians have facilitated, participated, but we haven't created. And the end result is the foreigner was the one. Our recent politics has pushed him aside, marginalized him, and told him, stay out of our business, and leave it to us. It's time for us now to recognize the word us is a bloody disaster. We want to partner with you now to be able to get back to where we need to get to so our children and our grandchildren and our families can have the opportunities. This is a unique place, but it only works when there's a genuine partnership.
So, if you can envisage Bermuda in 10 years' time on that basis, where will it be and where should it be?
Well, if to sit and do nothing is to watch a crime being committed, and you do nothing means the fact that you are somewhat as guilty as the person who's committed the crime. And then if you turn around and say to the person, you commit the crime, can I have a piece of the action? You definitely are in the water. So what we have now, we have a stagnant economy that's got a little bit of growth, but it's no. When you look at the debt, and you look at what where we are, and look at where we need to get to, it won't work. What we need to do is to say, okay, where do we want Bermuda to be in 10 years' time? And nobody has any idea where the world's going to be in 10 years' time. Nobody idea that Donald Trump would have been elected president. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to happen to Europe, and we sure as hell don't know what's going to happen to Asia. But what we should be saying is, regardless whatever happens to the world, what is it we need to do that's going to at least offer whoever in the world can use Bermuda as a place where they feel comfortable with to use it. We do that, and now, even with the technological revolution, whether it's robotics or whether it's printing or whether it's all forms of 3D printing, we will not have the same world as we have today. Ohm's law says that technology doubles every 18 months, which means the fact that how we do things and how we present things and how we move into this virtual world we're moving into and discoveries we're going to make, the changes are going to be so profound. It took us from 2,500 BC up until 1750 until we produced the first steam engine. Jesus. That's a long time. 100 years later, we had the combustion engine. Not even 100 years later, another 50 years later, oh, sorry, 80 years later, we had the computer uh-huh. at the University of Chicago, the first computer. And less than that, that would have been 40 years later, we had a desktop computer. And nowadays we have this thing called a cell phone that could do as much as a computer could do and could do more than what a computer could do at the University of Chicago on a computer. So you tell me what the world's going to look like We don't know. But I can tell you one thing. The physiology of Bermuda, remember I said the physiology, the sociology, and the resources. We got to co-op our physiology, which is our island itself, and the resources we have as an island, the attitude of our people, and give not only leadership from inside, but from outside, too. In other words, just don't leave it to the politicians, but join them in to facilitate what we want. That's the key to the thing. They've got to a stage now where they are the do-all and be-all. What we got to do is get them to be the facilitators of what we want. And when we have ideas, we tell them we want this change. Whether it's immigration policies change. Now, we can have this discussion in the public. It's not a political discussion. It is a community or a people discussion. We can have agreements and disagreements. The politician then weighs in and says, okay, I see majority of people now have come to the conclusion that's what we want, but they do a pro on it or whatever the case might be. We're going to facilitate. Now, that is very similar to what they do in Switzerland. Switzerland doesn't have Switzerland has a referendum almost anything.
That's right. Yep.
But you can't have a referendum unless you get so much support behind something, and then you get the referendum, and then it's decided what to do about it. Our little tiny little island got 36 members of parliament, with technology making a lot of noise. We're thinking ourselves as politicians being, and I've been one, of being important. The more we can think of ourselves as being ordinary, the more chance we have of becoming extraordinary. The problem with people is they think of themselves as extraordinary, that they're in this privileged position, you elected me and I'm going to take and make a decision, or I'm in this position where I can make the decision and you should not interfere with my decision. And the end result is the public, after a while, just pulls away, slips out of it. And Bermuda, 10 years from now, needs to change all that. We need a greater process of participation, and it can't just be the noise of the politician. It must be the noise of the community, because at the end of the day, it's how our children are going to be fed. At the end of the day, it's how our children are going to be educated, and at the end of the day, it's going to be how our children have aspirations to do something, because they feel as though that somehow the other, my parents had a hand in it. And what we've done is we've taken all that away from, and then we expect for people to do it. And, you know, more mechanical we become, the more technological we become, the more that becomes dehumanized. So if we're not careful, everything will be dehumanized, when in actual fact, we're trying to meet the needs of the human.
On that note, Sir John, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.